Well, sure, Detroit may be the city that put the world on wheels. But for a couple hundred years before that, it was all about the horse. At the end of the 1800s, there were some 12,000 horses clip-clopping along the streets of Detroit. Bill Loomis' piece in the Detroit News is Detroit Before Motors, The Horse Age. Bill, it turns out horses were not a big part of Detroit's very early history. You tell us Cadillac brought three horses and two died?
Yeah, that's right. You know, appropriately, it would come from Cadillac. One survived. And, you know, you think the horse would be called the Cheval du Berry, but it was just Colin. And Colin pulled stumps and hauled logs and all that kind of stuff.
In fact, didn't he rent Colin out to settlers?
Yeah. Cadillac was good at making money from all the people. That was just one more moneymaker for Cadillac.
And you also tell us the early French settlers, as kind of the years wore on, relied more on ponies than horses.
Right. They were famous for these ponies. They were called of Norman stock. They were sturdy ponies. And the reason they did ponies was they didn't have to really feed them. They could just put their brand on them and let them forage. They were much sturdier. But they would end up in these herds running through the middle of the city at night. People would hear them. And they were unpredictable. And they were not strong enough to pull full wagons. They pulled these little two-wheeled carts.
That's funny. In fact, tell us about these little two-wheeled carts. What were the pros and cons?
Well, they were lightweight and they were very functional, but they were also really unstable. It was only two wheels, so if you backed up the wrong way, the whole thing would collapse and people would be dumped in the street, and there were a lot of instances like that.
Well, in fact, if you could please share with us, because you dug up a clip from the Detroit Free Press of when was this?
1860.
Okay, so these were used through the 1800s.
This was pretty late. Yeah, this was almost to the Civil War they were still around. Yeah, this was a funny one. A runaway occurred on Woodward Avenue yesterday in which a French pony, a Canada go-kart, and a corpulent market woman figured extensively. The pony started off in spite of the efforts of his female owner, who tugged away at the lines and shouted French in the most energetic manner. The cart was full of cabbages which flew in all directions.
And that made the Detroit Free Press, that poor corpulent market woman.
I know.
And they called it a Canada
go-kart. They called them all kinds of names like that, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, urban horses, really, you say, tell us, were not common in America until after the 1830s. Why was that?
There was no real need for urban horses in any mass way until railroads came along, and there was a need to cart goods from the rail stations to places in the city. There were stagecoaches and there were what they call omnibuses, which were big stagecoaches which took people from hotels to the train and that sort of thing. And they did run a bit of a mass transit, but it never caught on in Detroit very well because the city was too small and people would say, oh, it's a nice day, I'll just walk.
I'll walk or I've got my little two-wheel cart if I had to do that.
Yeah, but the Detroit streets are so bad. As early as 1838, you read discussions of wanting to put rails in the street and run them like a railroad, only horse-drawn. And those were called horse cars. And they really appeared around the time of the Civil War.
So these forms of transportation on rails really made a difference if you were trying to navigate these rotten streets.
Oh, absolutely. Well, people liked them because they were smoother. The people could make money on them, the trusts as they were, because they could haul more people. But it was hard on the horses. It was not an easy life.
The horses that had to come in through the 19th century had so many roles, public transportation, firefighting.
Yeah.
You talk about the working horse and even how a store like Hudson's would, that was part of its image, was the type of horse that was carrying.
Yeah. They're painted wagons. And the breweries were very famous for their huge horses, you know, like Budweiser had their Clydesdales. Mm-hmm. Clydesdales weren't popular in Detroit or the cold cities because they had feathering on their legs, which would cause infections. So they went for Percherons, and you'd see these massive brewery wagons with barrels of beer going to the saloons with these magnificent horses. And Percherons, they held their heads up high, and they were really pretty stately looking.
I'm talking with historian Bill Loomis as we look at Detroit Before Motors, the horse age of Detroit. A couple of not-so-great topics. One has to be this idea of the horse as a living machine. By and large, did that teamster trying to get produce unloaded from the train, did it care whether that horse was uncomfortable or in pain?
They did a bit, but many didn't. And in fact, a lot of horses didn't even transport things. They just turned screws and jacks or they Blind horses were very popular on the market because they would just turn a winch or something like that. They were really like living machines for these people. It was tragic in a way, but it really the thought kind of began with René Descartes back in the 17th century. The idea that horses or animals did not feel pain or they had no emotion, that they didn't suffer. And that carried through to this notion of living machines. So horses died on the streets. People didn't take a lot of notice unless they weren't picked up. There wasn't a lot of sympathy until later in the century when cars began to replace horses. Then you started seeing the prevention of cruelty organizations. About 1865, those became popular, and they spread out to Detroit from New York City.
Another rather unsavory thing we have to talk about is anyone who's been on a trail ride or, you know, with a horse knows that there's a certain amount of daily output, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly.
Give us a term, break it down in numbers for us.
Well, a horse on average, based on the size, produced between 15 and 30 pounds of manure a day and 6 quarts of urine. So, you know, you imagine going to the farmer's market where there were probably 1,000 horses gathered. It was pretty unpleasant, and the streets were pretty god-awful because the stuff would dry and blow in people's eyes, and it hastened their demise.
Public health issue for sure. And then you were saying they actually had to, with the stables, put the horses up on the second floor.
Yeah, stables were organized in 3 floors. And the first floor were wagons and sleighs that they would store. Second floor were the horses. And then the third floor was hay and oats, the feed. It was dangerous for the horses because everything in a stable was flammable. And if there was a fire, and there were fires regularly, the horses didn't do well because they had to be brought down a ramp to get out. And many times they didn't do that. But when they tried to put the horses on the main floor, the urine from the horses was so obnoxiously strong that in the summer especially, the fumes would rise and actually peel the paint, blister the paint on the wagons and on the coaches and stuff like that.
I can only imagine an August day. Now, there were some, what I gathered from reading your story, Bill, some fun things about having horses in Detroit. And right. I got the sense that particularly as wintertime came, mm-hmm. it seemed like the song Jingle Bells come to life as people went sleighing.
Oh, they loved it. Yeah. It wasn't all bad. They had so much fun, and the children loved going sleighing, and anybody could do it. So it was a very egalitarian moment. It was kind of a combination of fashion show and fun time, because the people with fancy horses and coaches could parade around in these open sleighs, but anybody else could slap runners on anything. One fellow turned over his chicken coop and put runners on it and pulled his family around. People that owned delis would turn their wagons into sleighs, and it was kind of a wild time.
Speaking of wild time, when we think of drag racing on the surface streets and back streets, which is an issue today, they were doing it with horses, weren't they?
They were up and down Jefferson. And later, as the cars came in, that same space became the place where they raced cars, or tested the new cars, the new motorized vehicles. So they didn't have tickets for speeding, but they would give them tickets for something they called furious driving. And furious driving, they knew because the horse was foaming at the mouth, but they would even shoot at people, young men, if they were out of control, because it was really dangerous. But yeah, that was as close as they came. It was scary.
So the automobile becomes perfected, becomes a force in society. How long between then and the end of the era of the horse in Detroit?
Really began in about 1903 when cars like Ford was founded. And in 1908, he made his Tin Lizzie Model T. And that was – suddenly there were thousands of cars. And that went up till about 1929 when the horse was pretty much gone.
Just if Detroit's mounted police is about the only nod to that day.
Well, there's that. They still raced horses, and they still had some pleasure. But the horse became a pet, really. And even families said goodbye to their old favorite family horse. It was sad to read.
It really was. It's a great piece. Detroit Before Motors, the Horse Age. Bill Loomis writing that for the Detroit News. Always fun walking back and through Detroit's history with you, Bill.
Thanks, Cindy.